Rick Goddard on ABC Radio Hobart.
Dr. Louise Richardson self is a lecturer in philosophy and gender studies at the University of Tasmania. We won the Annette Beyer Prize this year, 2019, at the Australasian Association of Philosophy for her article, Offending White Men. What's the article about?
So the article is about when white men have made complaints to the Australian Human Rights Commission about being the victims of racist hate speech on the grounds of their whiteness, and trying to understand whether or not there's something qualitatively different between speech which targets people on the basis of whiteness and speech which targets people of colour on the basis of belonging to a marginalised racial group.
What did you find in that?
Well, my argument is that because of Australia's contextual history, the gravity of this kind of racialized speech, even when it's said with hateful intent, still has a qualitative difference in terms of how it's experienced by people of colour versus people who are white. And that's because the speech links up to a broader context where people of colour are still facing all kinds of entrenched systematic discrimination in lots of other ways. So my argument is that even if you are offended by racialized speech as a white person, it's not harmful in the same way that racist hate speech is.
Because when you get knocked over, you're falling onto a pile of mattresses.
Basically, that's a good way of putting it.
Mattresses of privilege. Tim Costello was in the media saying, come on, Christians, you know, you're not an oppressed minority. Settle down with this Israel Folau, we're so persecuted stuff. Is that a similar kind of argument?
Yeah, it would be. So, of course, everything is totally contextualised, right? In Australia, it's not the case that Christians are a minority group. It's not the case that the state has systematically oppressed them in various sorts of ways. But, of course, you could go to a different context at another moment in history or at this moment, but in another country, and the situation would be quite different. So, yeah, like right now, the Israel Folau case would be a perfect example of the argument that I'm making. But if this was taking place somewhere else, Asia Bibi, for example, in Pakistan, things might be different.
How many white men took cases to the Racial Discrimination Act?
Well, it's hard to know the exact number because when you take a case to the Australian Human Rights Commission, it remains private. And the only way that the public finds out about it is if the people involved make it public, or if it can't be determined at the level of the commission, and then it needs to go to a court for determination. So there were a couple of people who made complaints against Linda Burney when she said the only people who want to change Section 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act are these old white men who've never faced a day of discrimination in their life. And it seems to be the case that around about 40 to 50 separate people made submissions to the Australian Human Rights Commission about that, but there were a couple of people who wrote blog posts about it and who really explicitly outlined their rationale for why they would do that. And it's also been reported in The Australian that but in the annual year of 2015 to 2016, around about 15% of all of the submissions that the AHRC got were from white people.
How many?
About 15%.
And this is white people saying, well, I have been discriminated against. And what sort of examples did they give?
Sometimes it's cases where people will complain of being called a POM, right, if they're from an English background.
Mm-hmm.
But in the case of Linda Burney, for example, it was just what she said was the people who want to change 18C are these white men who've never faced a day of discrimination in their lives. And they objected to that. They thought that it was slanderous, that it was a false statement, and that it was painting white men as a group as being these horrible racist oppressors when that's not the case.
What did the Racial Discrimination Tribunal find?
They threw out the case.
Uh-huh. So, because that's interesting in and of itself, in a way, though it's not really relevant to your argument. Or is that part of what feeds your argument as a philosopher?
Well, I mean, it is relevant insofar as it's clear that the people who are making these determinations at the level of the AHRC, and there have been other cases which have made it to court previously, or which have come under state law where there are criminal sanctions for hate speech. And as of now, I've not come across any case where a white person has made this kind of claim and they've been successful. So what this illustrates is that the people who are making these decisions recognise that there is a qualitative difference when this happens to someone who's white versus when they're a person of colour. That said, there are a lot of people who share the popular opinion that these types of things are exactly the same. You know, if someone says so-and-so thinks this because they're white, how is that different from saying so-and-so thinks that because they're black? And my argument is it's different because of the history and the context and the way that speech links up with other kinds of oppressive circumstances.
So let's go over that again, just because it's so valuable, and this is the kind of information people can take into arguments for a lifetime, which makes you a very helpful and useful philosopher. and this is partly what the award recognises, isn't it, is that this work is so pragmatic in terms of looking at the law, looking at our lives, how we think and feel about ourselves, because a lot of white people probably feel that they're losing privilege, that they're losing power.
Yeah, and I think that's true, yeah.
And yet they're not maybe seeing just how the nature of the privilege on which they stand is.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing is, like, we exist in this world where we, you know, Australians understand themselves according to this liberal tradition where every individual is equal, where everyone is supposed to get a fair go. And if you don't have an adequate awareness of just how difficult it is for people of colour in Australia today as a consequence of past treatment and as a consequence of structural injustices, then when you see cases that appear to be equivalent to you being treated differently, like by bodies like the AHRC or by the courts or by the Advertising Standards Bureau and so forth, the natural conclusion is, well, this is reverse discrimination because these people are getting special treatment, but people like me, we're just being left here without our complaints being heard or addressed. So I think that part of the project here is to really hone in on those beliefs that we all share and then try to demonstrate, look, although these are our ideals, we haven't actually lived up to them yet. And until we live up to them, we can't treat these cases exactly the same. They need to be treated differently until we have an equal society. And then once we achieve that goal, then everybody will be treated formally exactly the same.
And until we achieve that goal, maybe rather than taking your case about white injustice to the Racial Discrimination Bureau, you could go help someone who hasn't got the advantages you have.
Yep. That's definitely something you could do as an alternative.
Great to talk to you and congratulations for the award.
Thanks, Rick.
It's just nice to see the recognition, and they do note this specifically in the award about just the usefulness of your philosophizing and how important that is.
Yeah, I really like to use philosophy as a tool for understanding the world that we live in. I think that that's where philosophy can have its greatest impact in society. So I'm really pleased it's been recognised as such.
Great to talk to you today.
Okay, thanks, Rick.